So as I mentioned, Nick Offerman will be joining us in the noon Eastern hour. Linda Hamilton will be joining us in about half an hour. And I want to get into on this Lazy River Wednesday where sports news is hard to come by. I want to get into the new ESPN radio lineup with Stugatz in a second. But first, please, Billy, for the love of God, tell me what you think about this Netflix Walter Mercado thing and allow me to be done with it after two damn segments of your yammering. Will you just tell me what you think about it so I could get the punctuation on this never-ending story?
I think at this point, it'll be quicker just to watch it, and then we can all talk about it together afterwards.
Why should they watch it, Billy?
Oh, Dan, it was such a happy movie and a sad movie. Walter Mercado. Let's not do this again. Just watch it. I highly recommend it. It was a sad story. The rise, the fall, and then the kind of again at the end of Walter Mercado. Just watch it. Just watch it. Trust me.
Well, you could do the same about our radio show. The rise, the fall, the rise, the fall. We are right now at the halfway point in our contract. And in a surprise, we're down at the half. So we have gone from
10. Or up, depending on how you look at it. I'm working less, making the same. I mean,
we have been leading for a long time, Stugatz. Like, we have been in the lead for a long time. If you know the history of this show, going way back, the best radio lineups we worked on, I think Stugatz would agree with this, are indisputably in Miami and local radio, where the whole lineup felt like one conversation. You had the shows arguing with each other. You had just basically at any time you checked in, it seemed like a frat house where a bunch of different people who really liked each other were having the same conversation all day. ESPN has never recreated that. And right now, it's about as far from that as I can imagine with their new lineup in terms of just one conversation all day. But what you have is in the afternoon, you have the situation of Max Kellerman and Mike Greenberg. They are, they're going to be doing noon to four. They're going to end up doing. And then in the morning, what are they doing in the morning, Stugatz?
They're going to have Zubin Mehenti, Keyshawn Johnson, and Jay Williams. And again, I said, if you bet that as the new ESPN morning show just a few months ago at a billion to one, congratulations. Good job by you.
Yeah,
now, I'm going to try to tie this entire radio lineup together. I am having Zubin on Stupidity to introduce him to the audience. I am doing that this week with Zubin. And when Greeny starts at noon Eastern, Dan, I am not leaving my chair. So I'm going to try to tie all of this together, okay?
You guys would have laughed so much if you had heard the conversation that Stugatz and I had where through giggling snorts, he said, I don't understand. Did they go through the entire Rolodex and get to the Z's and not ask me if I wanted to be a part of that morning show? Like, did they go through the entire alphabet without asking me whether I wanted to do the morning show with Keyshawn and with Jay Williams?
It seems that they skipped right over me, and I was thinking, if only my first name was Zab.
We need to change the imaging around here to the Dan Lebatard show with Zab. So what you have happening in the morning, like, you see what's happening outside, right? Open your curtains, look outside. And during these difficult times, you can't quietly just make your afternoons. While taking an hour away from your best and most diverse show, because in this time of trouble, America needs the soothing consensus of more Mike Greenberg. Like, you got to be careful with that. So, morning show. You see, if you're wondering how a hodgepodge of people come together to replace Golic and Wingo, and I'm not saying that that won't be a good show, because I want everyone to catch their voice. And there is the very real chance that that show becomes the best of all the shows on this lineup. But you saw what happened with the lineup because, like, I'm saying this just looking at it because no one's told me this. How could they tell me this? But I've told people, man, such a bad look to demote your most diverse show on television and highly questionable. You've got the most diverse show, the only Hispanic show you have on your network, and you're turning that and making it something that's at 2:30 in the afternoon, so you're demoting that. And then your most diverse radio show, you're taking that and giving an hour away to satiate the schedule of Mike Greenberg. Like, that's not the best look.
It's a great look. I will tell you this, that I am thrilled about this. They have turned this lineup over two or three times since we've been here, and we're still standing. Now, we're not standing 3 hours a day, Dan, but we are still standing 2 hours a day, and I, for one, would like to thank ESPN for allowing me to still have this platform while they've changed the lineup twice, and for still agreeing to pay me the same to do an hour less work. I don't see an issue here. This might be the greatest lineup we've ever been a part of.
I'd like to thank ESPN for all of it. For all of it. The idea that they allow us to do any of this stuff. We exist, at least in part, we exist among you guys who do like that this thing is weird and popular. We're allowed to exist being different specifically because of the lineup they just put together. They just put us in the middle of a lineup where we're not going to sound like any of that. Now, it'll also probably get us run off over time because it's pretty clear that's what ESPN wants to stand. That's what ESPN wants to sound like now, a more common sports radio.
I imagine that when this new lineup debuts, it's listen, we're doing 2 hour sprints. I mean, 2 hours is a sprint in radio where we're talking, Billy's going off for a half hour of the 2 hours that they have given us here with this platform, and they're just looking at their watch and saying, hey, don't worry, you got 4 hours of Greedy and Kellerman coming up. Like, we're only 90 minutes away.
That's right. Don't worry. Look, all that yammering you heard where Billy was talking in the middle of it offered an apology to every Latin figure who's ever been on television. If you don't want that with your sports day, Greenberg at noon, Kellerman 2 hours after that. Kellerman, I'll tell you, Stugatz, I don't know if people know this, Kellerman is exceptional at radio. I think if you do not like First Take or you do not like what Max is on First Take, Max Kellerman is a great solo radio host. Not good, great. And solo radio, Stugatz, is not only do I find it lonely, I can't do it, like, because of how hard it is, because of the talent and the ego and the narcissism required to think that your voice matters alone for 2 hours and that you don't need any help. Like, the most talented people in our business are the people who could do it that way, where they could just talk to a microphone for 2 hours and make it entertaining without anybody's help.
Yeah, I think, like, the best I've ever heard at doing it is Neil Rogers, just doing radio solo by himself. He was a local host down here in Miami for many years in the middays and had the highest rated show in Miami for decades. It's very tricky to do. Max Kellerman does it very, very well. And it's, but Dan, I will say that a little bit easier to do in little small 2 hour windows. And so, like, it's so hard to do, and Dan is so right on this, that the greatest person to ever do this, Howard Stern, needs an entire supporting cast to make that show what it is. It's Robin and it's supporting cast, but to do it by yourself is very difficult, but Max will do it well.
Roy, what is the rest of the ESPN radio schedule? It debuts here soon.
After the Max Kellerman show, from 4 to 7 is Sinead Ogumike and Mike Golic Jr. And from 7 to 9 is Span and Fitz. And from 9 to 1 is Freddie and Fitzsimmons.
All right, so a well-rounded lineup there. It's good to see that the makers of First Take, Your Take did not ruin the career of Jason Fitz, that he has found a landing spot with Sarah Spain here where he can be better than he was under that construct.
I'm glad that Freddie Coleman is still part of the lineup. I maintain, Dan, that as long as ESPN Radio has a lineup, Freddie Coleman will be a part of that lineup. Okay, that is it. Like, he'll be standing, there'll be no one left. We'll be gone, but Freddie Coleman will still be there.
Well, for the record, I have been told in the wake of all of these changes, Stugatz, I have been told that they want me to retire here. That is something that I've been told. Unfortunately, I don't know if it means, like, retire in the here and now at this very moment. I don't know whether they meant at the company or just they'd like us to go away right now. You know what I think we should do, Stugatz? Because you can't put a lineup together like this and have it be one conversation throughout the day that is fluid. That's going to take a while. But just like you're bringing on some of the members of the new radio team onto Stupidity, I think that one of the things that we should do in order to link, because look, man, we've been doing radio for 20 years, and I'm telling you, Stugatz knows radio. Stugatz knew how to put together a lineup. The best lineups we were in are not in, they're not national. They're not close. Like, even when we're talking about Scott Van Pelt and Colin Cowherd or whatever it is you view as the glory days of ESPN radio, they're not close to what Stugatz assembled in Miami in terms of linking the conversation throughout the day. Yes, Billy.
I think I see what's going on here, Stugatz. Dan wants to, because back in the day, Boog Shambi used to lead into Dan's show. And Dan and Boog from time to time would do crosstalk, either ending Boog's show or starting Dan's show. I think Dan's trying to get in on a little crosstalk with Greeny every day. And that's what's going on here. He wants like the conversation to flow, and he wants to do stuff with Greeny for a while.
Yes. I'm not you. I appreciate that as a theory. That's usually the Stugatz move. I will tell you the way I'm angling. I think the way that we could link all of the pieces and all the shows is for us to fight with all of the other shows. Like that is really? One way to do it, right? Just feud with all of them so that we force our way into their conversations. I like that as an idea. Are you down for fighting with everybody?
Listen, it's hard. I don't want to fight too much with Greeny. I'm upset that our relationship did not develop the way I thought it was developing, where Greeny would actually tell me he was taking an hour of my platform. I learned it from Andrew Marchand, but I am also thankful for Greeny at the same time for wanting to do this. Again, Dan, you are missing, you are burying the headline, an hour less, pay the same. I mean, so, but listen, I will say that I'll talk to Greeny. If you want to tie it together with Keyshawn and Zubac, go ahead. I will sit around and talk with Greeny and tie this whole network together.
All this fighting, Dan, I don't know. Have you ever heard it's better to catch flies with honey than with vinegar? Has Walter Mercado taught you nothing? Mucho, mucho amor, Dan. No fighting. Be positive.
You mentioned Boog Shambi. I can't get the Boog Shambi South Korean baseball song out of my head.
Oh, that's great.
ESPN Boog Shambi, wow! ESPN Boog Shambi, let you go, wow! Together, wow! ESPN Boog Shambi, ESPN Boog Shambi, wow! ESPN Boog Shambi, let you go, wow! Together, wow! ESPN Boog Shambi.
I love that song. I've been singing it. Yeah.
After we debuted that the other day on the show, I got a text from Boog and we were talking about the song. I'm like, this has to be one of the coolest things that's ever happened to you. You have a song, and not to betray a confidence, but he said, it's not just a song. There's also a dance.
There is a dance. The video makes it even stronger.
Dan, Boog is a perfect example where, listen, it's hard. Management has a hard job at ESPN where it's difficult to know and identify what all their talent can do. Although I've said before, there should be a czar of programming. And since I'm only doing 2 hours a day now, I am available to help out if they want my help. I am telling you, and Dan will back me up on this, I'm not certain we have a better radio talk show host at the entire network than Boog Shambi. But I'm not certain if anyone knows that Boog is really that good at it. I don't know.
Yes, that is a funny thing that you said. Something else funny from yesterday. Where are we on the garlic update, Chris Cody? We never got the payoff on that because we handled the end of yesterday's show, or I handled it so fluidly that we never got to the garlic payoff. You had your foot in a bag of garlic for an hour. We were testing the hypothesis that if you do that, you will taste garlic for up to an hour afterward. What are the results of your science?
I would say after an hour, I wasn't constantly tasting garlic, but I was catching little whiffs of tastes of garlic. So I would say that that is an accurate statement. If you put garlic in a bag and put your foot in it for an hour, you will start to smell and taste garlic. And I said yesterday that I enjoyed it so much, the little whiffs of garlic, that I have garlic in my socks right now. I'm wearing socks today.
Come on.
I actually have garlic in there right now. I enjoy
so unpleasant.
I just enjoy it.
He just held up a foot with garlic in it and a sock. He's not making that up. She must have needed a good amount of pain relief, given how physical those movies were that she was in that made her famous. Sarah Connor. Roy, I don't think I've ever seen him so offended when Chris just said, I've never seen The Terminator. Chris said that. And we were all like, that was blasphemy. It was offensive what it is that Chris said. So Linda Hamilton joins us now on ESPN Radio. Thank you for doing so, Linda. You had to have suffered a great many injuries with the filming of those movies, correct?
Absolutely. Yep, it's the nature of what I do. But, you know, I tend to just ignore those and keep going.
Are there any that we can remember, or you want to keep it moving because we don't want to talk about the physical pain of having to do that kind of physical work?
Oh, it's just, the most recent one was just brutal because it was just nonstop. Every day was like being a triathlete. You know, you swim and dive and do stunts and do running scenes and, you know, then you get an ear infection and they'd hang you upside down in a Humvee for the next few days. So you want to throw up as well as have an ear infection, you know, with a dislocated shoulder. That's what I do.
where and when and how did part of your hearing become affected? Which movie were you filming?
That was number two. And that was just when we were in the elevator and Arnold is blasting away at the T-1000 and I forgot my ear protection. And so squibs are going off. We're in a very tight, closed, enclosed space. And squibs are going off. So I fell to my knees. I literally thought I had been shot, you know, because the pain was so great. I was like, I know I wasn't just shot, but, and the squibs are still going off and nobody has yelled cut. So I just get back up and keep on firing.
Did you have any templates? Because I know now Charlize Theron is doing things like Atomic Blonde and she's got a new movie on Netflix. Did you have any template for what a female action star was supposed to look like?
No, but I did very much have a template for what Sarah Connor needed to look like. You know, just one role was almost too much for me. So, you know, I don't have any real strong notions about, you know, I mean, a hero is what a hero does, not how a hero looks.
Again, her movie is Easy Does It. It's in theaters and on demand this Friday, July 17th. Weren't you a classically trained actress? Like, how does it happen that you go from what you were doing to Terminator?
Yeah, I really was. I studied at the Actors Studio and in New York. You know, I thought I would be a Shakespearean actress, but you know, at the beginning of a career, you don't have the luxury of, you know, picking and choosing. You're just so grateful to have anything come your way. And so, you know, it's not necessarily a controlled acceleration there. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, okay. And, you know, wonderful accidents happen. I guess that I found a certain strength that I never would have called upon unless it was demanded of me in those circumstances. And, you know, you do something well and that's what you get for the rest of your life. So, but I have no complaints. I really enjoy it. I just enjoy the pace and the hardship. I just, you know, nothing sinks you in faster than just being just fully immersed in difficulty.
The role has served you well. Linda Hamilton with us here at ESPN Radio. Did you know, I'm wondering, did you know while you were making Terminator that you were making something that would eventually be viewed as iconic, a classic, really?
No, you never. Well, I nobody had even thought of the word franchise. And I had never thought of franchise up to that point in my career either. You know, I mean, those sort of were launched a little bit later. I mean, other than Star Wars, you know, there weren't a lot of franchises. And James Bond, of course, the original. But no, so when, you know, and it was 7 years before it came back for the second one.
Right.
So there was a 7-year gap where I remember being, you know, hugely pregnant when Jim approached and said, we're going to do another one. I was like, uh-oh. you know, but I just knew that she had to be a fierce, with her knowledge of what was coming in the world, she had to be a fierce fighter. And that's what I said to Jim, go and write that. And she's crazy, too.
New film, Easy Does It, is in theaters on demand this Friday. We will talk to her about that in a second. But how did your life change? Linda Hamilton with us on ESPN Radio. How did your life change after after Terminator hit and was a wild success?
Yeah, it was the second one, really, that was life-altering. The first one was a very slow burn. And as I say, it took 7 years before anybody even wanted to make a second one. But, you get to a certain point of notoriety. It really did sort of burst from there. And you get to a point where, like, the guy that, like, pumps gas at your corner where, you know, you've lived for 15 years and he's suddenly like, how did they do that? Did they pump air into your muscles?
Yeah, because you got extraordinarily fit, and that was not you were not getting the help of graphic help there. Maybe the second one was groundbreaking in terms of what they did graphically. The first one, you were not getting any enhancements in terms of makeup or anything else there.
No, and I had really bad hair, which I'm just hoping that movie will disappear. The first one. I was young. I mean, I really didn't. The fitness really had to come on after the first one, where she knows what's ahead, and turns into a warrior.
What is Easy Does It about?
It's just a wacky caper movie. Two idiots on the run from a drug kingpin who they owe money to. So I am the drug kingpin, King George, and and it's really just a fun, wacky ride with very likable characters and ridiculous things that happen to them as they're on the run.
What would you classify as the most rewarding work that you've done?
I worked with a program, a company to build a program for the mentally ill, to just sort of get it out and discuss it and discuss medicine and discuss bad responses to medication and ways to stay sort of physically fit, mentally and emotionally fit. And that was just, something that I signed on to do because I have bipolar. And so that was really meaningful. I mean, it wasn't a film, but it was great to just sort of get out there and put like a very public celebrity face and just say, man, get some help.
How and why did that come to be? Like, what is it that you discovered and, what was happening? Because at the time, this isn't even stuff we talked about, right?
Well, exactly. And that is exactly what made me want to just, I don't have much of a filter anyway. I forget that I'm supposed to shape people's image of me. I'm not about mystery or celebrity, So it just came up in an interview at some point. It's like, I was just diagnosed with bipolar. And of course that became huge news. And then, people are, including drug companies coming in wanting me to be their spokesperson. But, that was not the point of it. The point of it was that it just came out, and then I was like, everyone wanted me to be that face. So I developed a program that really addressed the whole body and its response to mental illness. It was called the Wellness Campaign. But basically just to say to people, you don't have to feel like this, and there is no shame in getting help. Shame is when you don't get help.
Was that immediately fulfilling, or was there some shame put upon you because you were one of the few who were out there publicly with it?
Never had that response at all. I mean, I do remember that in my early days on medication, the insurance companies were really sort of difficult. They didn't know how to navigate that. And, you know, the minute that you say you're on this medication, it just, it was like a stopgap a couple of times because possibly other people on the medication never put that down in their chart. I have no idea. Or it was just, you know, a timing. But they kept, you know, after me. And it was like, well, what happens if you don't take your medication? That's the big question. And finally, I wrote on the form, I want to kill insurance executives. It was like, oh, come on. You know, then they were like, oh, okay, we'll let her.
We all do. Put her on the poll, Guillermo. Do we all want to kill insurance executives?
We'll let you go here in just a second. We appreciate the time. If I told you back when you were filming with Arnold that he would eventually be the governor of California, you would have told me what?
No way.
There it is.
No way. Yeah, didn't see that one coming.
None of us did. Linda, thank you for being on with us. Again, Easy Does It. Is it in theater? It is in theaters on demand this Friday. Check it out. Linda Hamilton, Sarah Connor with us on ESPN Radio. Thank you for being on with us.
Thank you, darling. Talk to you soon.
Nick Offerman going to join us in the noon Eastern hour. Chris Cody is having splotchy internet, so I am concerned about going to him right now. But he's been saying for weeks now that his wife is trying to tell him something in her sleep. What is happening here, Chris? Is your internet working? And what do you believe that your wife is trying to tell you in her sleep?
I appreciate you going to me when I've had, like, really, this is as bad as my internet's been, I think, in the whole quarantine, but I'm glad that we're going to me here. So my wife has been telling me, we go to bed at different times, me and my wife. She goes to bed around 11. I go to bed, you know, a little later, sometimes around midnight. So I always get into bed and she's already asleep. And she doesn't have any recollection of anything I'm about to say. So I feel like she's subconsciously telling me something. Anytime I get into bed, she does this like vicious turnaround because she always likes to start sleeping kind of towards like facing me. And then as soon as I start to get into bed, she does this like, I hate you. Like she's telling me with her movement, I hate you. Vicious turnaround to the other side. Like I'm turning away from you. You've disrupted me. But then I bring it up in the morning and she has no recollection of doing that to me at all. So I'm like, does she realize that she just like hates it when I get into bed? She obviously doesn't. So I'm like, is this like a subconscious thing? Do you guys experience anything like this?
I would say that what's happening there is that she is simply, she's got a lifetime of resentments towards you and she's repressed and they come out in her subconscious when you as a disgusting garlic smelling thing get into bed with her.
She hates you. She hates that you're there. She hates that you're waking her up every night an hour after she's gone to sleep and she can't get a clean night's sleep all the way through. She hates you. She's saying that she doesn't, but she does.
But I'm not waking her up. She doesn't remember this. So it's like, I don't know what I'm doing. I try to do it so quiet, too, because I know it's coming. The vicious turn. Like once a month, I'll get into bed and she won't do the vicious turnaround. So then I'm always feeling very good about myself. But it is discouraging.
How could it be a lifetime of resentments? You've been married for 2 minutes.
Okay, for as long as they've been married. If not a lifetime, maybe it's felt like a lifetime during this pandemic because everyone's locked together. Has it gotten worse during the pandemic? Do you find that she is trying to create some sort of force field between herself and that smell of garlic feet that is coming into her house and into her bedroom and occasionally liquored up and in search of sensuality?
That's what it is.
I'm going to go ahead and say that if she wants to be more aggressive about this, she should go wherever it is that you buy stop signs and put it on her back so that...
He's a Cody. He still won't recognize it.
He won't see it as he's gotten into the liquor. But I don't believe that this is subtle, and I don't believe that this is subconscious. I believe that what your wife is trying to tell you is what she is telling you, which is she needs a barrier between her and you where she doesn't have to look at you. And if she didn't have to smell you, she would prefer that too. But you keep coming to bed after having soaked your feet in garlic, and then you look for romance.